Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power, and we're talking about that literally today. Have you ever been around a kid that your first response is, if I could send this kid to the moon, I'd like to do it, because they are just, one, fidgety, they can't seem to sit still. And typically boys are more of this genre than the girls are, although trust me, there are some girls that are the same way. And there usually is, in today's world, a label put on someone. And is this something new? Not really. But now we have got a label, one of many, that we like to identify people with, especially kids. And ADD is one of those labels. Sound familiar to you? Did you have a problem when you were in school? You just couldn't seem to absorb the information that was being given to you? And maybe it wasn't because of a lack of interest. It was because your brain just worked differently. Well, we're going to find out more about this reality from a gentleman who has been labeled, and he went on to surprise a lot of people because he didn't decide that he was going to have the label stamped on him personally for the rest of his life. ADD is a gift, not a disorder. Brad Worthley is my guest, and he says, if you don't have it, you should get it. Brad, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Well, it's a delight. I was really impressed with this book because with all of the interviews that I have done through the years and the doctors that I have talked with that have worked with kids that have particular learning disabilities, so often they say it's in the brain. But this is something we've gotten so removed from understanding how people develop, how they grow, how kids need to experiment, explore. They need to do so many different things, and we want to have them like little ivory saints that are just going to be perfect, absolutely straight-A students, and they're just going to go through life like little robots, and everything's going to be perfectly wonderful. It doesn't work that way. I've yet to meet a kid that fits that modality. If they do, I go, something's wrong here. So most of the attitudes are just the opposite. Oh, that kid is perfect. Isn't that wonderful? The ivory statue image. That's perfect. We know everything's going to be wonderful, and you find out it isn't. Let's talk about you, because you had a rough time in school, didn't you?
It was not that much fun. you know, I was a social rock star. I mean, I did good in school as far as being social, but every time I go to a class, I kept getting C's, and I couldn't figure it out because I never skipped. I mean, I wasn't doing drugs. I wasn't doing anything. I was there every day. I was focusing, trying to learn. I did my homework, but I would get C's, and the kid sitting next to me, you know, he can't throw a football, can't tie his shoes, and he eats his boogers, and he's getting straight A's, and I'm going, really? So it was very frustrating to me to be able to try my best, and I kept getting told, you don't apply yourself. And God, I could just shoot somebody for every time I heard the words, you know, you don't apply yourself, because I did. So it was very frustrating going through school and getting C's.
One of the studies that was done, I don't know if it was by Harvard or what other humongous university, was they found that those students, even in college, often that got the straight A's, the ones that could memorize and could do everything according to, quote-unquote, whatever the expectations were, they often, when it came to going out and living in the real world, didn't adapt in very many ways. In fact, many of them went on to become professors, which is questionable. But the thing is, what you've got here is that you may have someone that is brilliant. I'm not taking that away. Somebody that's exceedingly intelligent and they're able to do certain things. But they found that most of those people that were C students went on to establish companies, becoming very successful. And it was a real perplexing situation to them. It was because these people didn't And you can't put everybody in one box, but they thought differently. Let me use those words. They thought differently. Now, you ended up taking wood shop, auto shop, photography, anything that involved unique thinking and creativity. You just soaked that up like a sponge.
Yeah, I was a rock star in those, too. That's true. It's just to survive. I mean, I took wood shop, auto shop, and all those kind of as a survival mode because I was good at those. And in order to keep my self-confidence up and not get myself crushed, I just got drawn to things that were more artistic and more creative, and it got me through school. Those were the A's, and those were the B's, and everything else was C's and D's. So that's how I ended up getting my average of a C. But in school, it's really hard because you're not sure what's wrong with you. You can't even identify it. As a child, you're not even sure why it is you're not doing better. And like I said, I think the biggest gift we can give our children is the gift of confidence. And it's the thing that this education system, I'm talking about traditional education system, it robs children of that. And it's my biggest frustration is that the education system rewards memory. And I'm not taking anything away from students who are A and B. I'm not trying to rob them of anything. But, you know, good grades are pretty much a genetic predisposition. If your parents had a great memory, more than likely you got passed down a good memory as well. People like myself, ADD is also a genetic predisposition. My father was a C. I'm a C. My son's a C. So the education system has no way to be able to measure people like myself because all it really does in most cases is measure memory. And I think that's really unfair that we aren't able to measure some people's brilliance the way it should be.
I agree. Now, this is something that's not new. This is something I think that throughout history this has been recognized. But when you know, educational systems usually are standards. And instead of looking at anyone, saying, what are your strongest interest areas? What are your strengths? And when you're young, you don't know very much about that. And you need to know the reading, the writing, and the arithmetic. I mean, I don't care who you are. Those basics need to be done. And once you've got that down, then it's finding out where should that person be. Now, you have ended up owning more than one company. You have become a very wealthy man. You are an individual that didn't shy away from doing things on your own. Your dad was the same patterning. He did all kinds of things. If something needed to fix, okay, how do I figure this one out? He would do things, and he wasn't mediocre in what he did. And you haven't been mediocre in what you've done, and that you were weak in, you made sure you aligned yourself with someone who was the best of the best in that. You needed statistical analysis, you went to somebody that was the A-plus in the local college. You say, hey, would you do this for me? Because that wasn't your strength. And I think many times we lose sight of that, and so many people get disheartened. Now, one of the components that really, really intrigued me here were the classification of the different. ADD is one classification. We also have dyslexia. And let's break some of those down and say what they are. How have these labels developed, by the way? Who decided that what was what?
Well, the mental health industry in the last year or two, they switched everything over, so everything is now ADHD. So, and we used to have ADD, which is attention deficit disorder, and we had ADHD, which is attention deficit with hyperactivity disorder. But the mental health industry, for whatever reason, I don't agree with it, but they didn't contact me about it, is there everything now is ADHD, and there's three different types. There's attention deficit, there is hyperactivity, and then there is both of them combined, attention deficit with hyperactivity. So there's three different types of ADHD. And to confuse things worse, many people with ADD or ADHD, whichever one you'll call it, many people have coexisting conditions. Probably, from what I read, 60% of people with ADD or ADHD have a coexisting condition like dyslexia, Tourette's, depression, bipolar. So there are it is one of the reasons that some people who have ADD or ADHD, they struggle and they cannot find the gift. I know I get challenged sometimes on saying, if you don't have it, you should get it. But there's two groups of people that probably don't feel the gift. One of those is people that have coexisting conditions. They have ADD or ADHD, but they also have depression that goes along with it. But they're not, ADD does not cause the depression necessarily. It doesn't cause Tourette's. It doesn't cause dyslexia. They're relational, but they're not causational. So they're two separate animals, and they even have two separate treatments. So many people are told that they have ADHD, but their doctors haven't diagnosed that they actually have a secondary or coexisting condition. So anytime you meet someone that says ADD or ADHD has ruined my life, I'm miserable as an adult, my guess is it's a big signal and flag to me that they actually have a coexisting that has not been diagnosed yet, which needs to be treated separately. Make sense?
Yes, it does. And that's what I think is so frustrating. People want to put others in a box, and it's just not a good thing to do as far as I am concerned. You go into so many different aspects in your book, and one of the points that you bring out is that the brain is working differently. And I did an interview within the last 2 weeks with a woman who especially was relating with boys. She's a teacher, and she works primarily with young boys. And she said, you need to realize that certain aspects of their brain, it works very differently from the female, and you have to be aware of that. And so we discussed that at length, and you bring that out in your book. Boys, typically, are the ones that are labeled. Most of the teachers today are women. I think many times teachers, especially when they come right out of college, they haven't a clue. They really need to have a mentor like an older teacher, and I know this is being done in the state of Alaska, which I think is fabulous. But there needs to be an understanding. Because someone's wiggling in a chair, it doesn't mean that they're not thinking. It just means
actually,
they're wiggling.
You're actually right. You know, and there's a couple different thoughts about that. They say that probably two-thirds more boys have ADD or ADHD than girls. But there's also a train of thought that says boys just wiggle more. I mean, they just are simply more fidgety. They react to the impulse of hyperactivity where girls will suppress it. So there's even within the mental health community, they can't even agree on whether or not men or boys do get it more often. But I think that there's so many variables, as you mentioned. One of those is simply just boy versus girl. But also, even within the same class, if you look at 5 or 6-year-olds, in the same first grade class, you can have kids that are 10 months apart or almost a full year apart in the same class. Mm-hmm. Now, that can be the difference. You have two kids in class. One of them's fidgeting. Well, heck, it's because he's 5 years old and the other one's 6. Even a year difference can sometimes just make a difference in maturity, and so it gets misdiagnosed many times in the school system, but unfortunately, it is extremely undiagnosed in most of the population. I think in the world today, 95% of people that have ADD or ADHD don't know it, because people like myself, baby boomers, how would we know? That never even existed back in our day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's always fascinating that when you have boys, the best thing you can do when they're restless and antsy is to give them something to do.
Absolutely.
Absolutely give them something to do and say, okay, it's sort of like the Karate Kid. I just love that movie. And I think that that's such a good demonstration. Here's this young kid. He's just, I want this. I want it now. I want that, that, that. Okay, you go paint the fence.
Right.
Go this way. Go the other way. Go this way.
Wax on, wax off.
Yes,
I love that.
I just think this is so true. Now, what's happening then? What is happening is that there is a focus that is occurring. And he's moving. He's got an activity. He is moving. And I interviewed a world-renowned martial artist. And when he was a child, he was born in Korea. and he was literally left to die, and he survived. And he went into martial arts. He watched, and he was given the job of sweeping the floor. That was his discipline, and it was a male teacher he had. That was all he was allowed to do. Well, he was totally dysfunctional, totally dysfunctional. Huh. Well, within a year, he was able to sweep better, and he wasn't allowed to do a sloppy job. Within 2 years, he got even better. And what happened is that the brain was being trained by the activity of the sweeping. And it enabled him then to eventually apply and be in this class that his master teacher was overseeing. But always he was given something to focus on and the expectation that he had to finish the job and do it well. He wasn't overloaded with too much information, but the expectation was there. And meanwhile, he had to go and help his family and do all kinds of things. So it's a fascinating phenomenon. Let's talk for a moment about the gift. There is a huge list that you have here relating, in fact, it's 151 points of the advantage of having this uniqueness of mind processing. Uh-huh. Boy, that 151 points, you must have had fun coming up with that.
Well, I tried to narrow it down, and in the book I really tried to narrow it down to three that seem to be the most predominant. And the three that are most predominant in people with ADD or ADHD is creativity, ingenuity, and fearlessness. You know, again, not great with memory, but yet if you take away the memory side of it, tremendous creativity and ingenuity. And the biggest thing is the fearlessness, and you mentioned it, is that we make unbelievably great entrepreneurs. Now, I've created 7 companies over the last 39 years, and so many people that I meet out in the world as a business consultant, which is what I do for a living, I can't tell you how many successful people I've met, and they are ADD, and many of them are dyslexic. Which is like for Richard Branson. I'm sure you're familiar with Richard Branson, who started, you know, the Virgin Global Empire. He owns 300 companies. He's a billionaire many times over. In his latest book, he came out and said, I was ADD and I was dyslexic. And matter of fact, I had to quit school because the school system, I didn't function well in that environment. So I concur with you that there are so many people that have these fabulous gifts, and most of them did not do well in school. They were C's. But the further away you get from school, all of a sudden you start to recognize, you know what, I actually think I'm smart. And the problem is when you leave school with C's, you know, your self-image takes a little bit of a beating, and you kind of go into the world questioning. You know, mm-hmm. The school system says I'm not that smart, so maybe I'm not. And then again, you kind of test your wings and you kind of make your way through life, and all of a sudden, I was in my 20s, and all of a sudden, I'm going, you know what, I really feel smarter than the school system says I was. And then I started businesses, and I started, you know, forging my way through life, and I realized, you know what, I am smart. And my life changed when I all of a sudden recognized that the school system was the one that's broken, not me. And by the way, I'm not talking about teachers or administrators. I've got friends that are, you know, fabulous teachers. Mm-hmm. This hasn't mm-hmm. got anything to do with them. They are in a system that they have no control over. They're told what to do and how to do it. So true. It's not true. About them. The entire education system, traditional education system, is broken. But I'm not necessarily blaming teachers or administrators. It's not their issue.
Well, I think anyone that really is a good teacher realizes that the system is working against them and they don't have any voice.
Absolutely. Yeah, and even worse than that, Don, yeah. You know how they're starting to talk about evaluating teachers, how they're trying to find a way to, they're testing kids and they're making them take tests and they're going to actually evaluate the teachers based on that? Well, now you're telling a teacher that you're going to get, by the way, evaluated now on your student's memory, because them being successful in taking a test is going to be based on their ability to have good memory, attention to recall. And so here we are, we're going to measure teachers on a child's actual genealogy and their genetic predisposition. That's horribly unfair to teachers. So I'm an advocate for teachers. I think there's a lot of change that needs to occur, and I think that the teachers will also benefit from that.
Well, I think, again, it's an entirely different learning approach that needs to, not that some of the basics are not valid, they are, but I do think there's a need for something different. When you talk to someone who has graduated from high school, or actually dropped out of high school, I'm thinking of a young woman that I met when I did one remote show, and she was working as the manager. She was the manager of a pet shop. And she said, I got so bored in school, I couldn't see the logic of what was going on. But to get a job, I had to go. I dropped out. I had to go back and get my GED. And she said all it was memorization, the very thing that you mentioned. She said, in no way did school prepare me for life. Now, here is a manager. She was an ace. She was problem-solving every day. She was dealing with iguanas. She was dealing with tarantulas, dogs, cats, all kinds of things. She handled problems, and she had as a mentor a woman who was one of these people that didn't necessarily do well in school, but my goodness, that woman was able to keep things under a tight rein, and she made this quote-unquote pet store just shine. This woman was brilliant at what she knew. So this young woman was apprenticing under her and had proven herself very competent. She had the total trust of this woman. And she told me directly, my education really didn't begin until I got out in the world and I realized that I could do things differently. So I think we've got a big gap here. And that's what happens with a lot of young people when they come out of college. They have gotten an indoctrination process, but they haven't necessarily, depending on whoever they've come in contact with, been able to develop that side of themselves that is unique and different.
I agree.
Can maybe you can be a best pastry chef in the world or in your neighborhood. It doesn't make any difference. It's really interesting. I have to share this quote, though. I love this. You got it from Zig Ziglar. An optimist is someone who goes after Moby Dick in a rowboat and takes the tartar sauce with them. He just loved that.
Yep. That's one of my favorites from him.
I love that one.
Well, you know, it's interesting with ADD because there are people that ADD impacts everybody. It impacts men, women, all ages, all everything. And also, it impacts even four-point students. So there. You know, they might do well in school because they got phenomenal memories, but they may have a sense of disorganization and procrastination. So ADD or ADHD, it is infectious, and it impacts a great part of our population. And my estimation is it's about 30% of our population. The experts started saying 3% about 10 years ago. Then it went up to 5%. Then it went to 7%. Then it went to 10, and recently they're talking about 11 and 12. Well, hang on for the next 10 years, and I will guarantee you we're going to get to the point where we're going to actually find out that almost one-third of our population has attention deficit issues of some sort, because I think it's much broader than that. And the reason is 60% of our kids leave high school today with C's. And you cannot tell me that any child goes to school to want to get C's. It's not our makeup. Our makeup is we want to be successful. We want to be inclusive. And so I just don't think that any child goes to school wanting to get C's. So why is it 60% of our population gets them?
Mm-hmm.
And 22% of the kids drop out. You know, it's a scary number. 22% of our children never make it to graduation. And I'll tell you why they don't make it to graduation. Is my research showed that 95% of the children that dropped out had C's, D's, and F's. My thought is that all they're trying to do is protect themselves emotionally. If you're told that you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, and you're trying and doing everything you can in your power to do your best, but you're still getting told by your parents and your teachers that you're not smart enough, well, what do you do to protect yourself? You drop out. And so I think these kids that dropped out of school, I think that there's brilliance behind them. I think a lot of them may have attention deficit issues. A lot of them, though, may be our, you know, future scientists and our Richard Bransons and our Bill Gates. I think there's a tremendous amount of brilliance in these people, but they got sent off in the world with a self-image issue and tortured for the rest of their life because they just leave the world believing never were good enough, and that's sad.
You have a chapter, People Don't Fail, Systems Do, and
yep.
you have a number of suggestions in this book so that individuals can say, okay, I can relate to what you're saying. How do I do certain things? And you have these suggestions. You've implemented them yourself.
Uh-huh.
And you say you really need to be aware of certain particulars because it's just when you have the ADD, ADHD, whatever term you want to utilize, you're accountable to yourself, period. So you, the tips that you get, you talk about the SMART goals, which are specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timed.
Uh-huh.
People might say, oh, I've tried setting goals and it just hasn't worked. Give us an example of how this has worked for you.
Well, I live and breathe by this in the business world. It's one of the things I teach as a business consultant, that again, that people don't fail, systems do. We need, as leaders of people or as parents, our role is to keep our children, for example, physically and emotionally safe. Keeping children emotionally safe is helping them with good systems to help be the help them be successful. And this is not just true of children with ADHD, it's true of all children. Example for people with ADD normally have memory issues, normally not great organization. Well, for example, on my desk right now, on the corner of my desk, my wallet sits in the corner of my desk, my cell phone sits on top of it, and my keys sit right next to it as well. When I go to leave the house, I'm never worried about where my keys are, where my wallet. I never walk out of the house without my phone. Everything that needs to go with me when I'm heading for my car is always in the exact same spot. So that's an example of a system, is make sure that you have rituals that you stay consistent with. Whatever it is you do, just develop a level of consistency that helps keep you in what I call ritual mode. People like myself, again, not great with memory. Most people with ADD or ADHD aren't good book readers, at least to start out, because reading, we start reading and then our brain takes off and goes off in a different direction, and we all of a sudden realize that we forgot the entire page. We read the page, but we really didn't learn anything because we just kind of read it without thinking much. So I use a yellow highlight pen when I'm reading. Anytime that there's something really important that I want to retain, I take a yellow highlight pen and I highlight it. I'll read the entire book and I'll highlight it. Then I'll go back through, I'll reread the book again, and I'll reread only the highlighted areas. And our brains just work different. And if I can share a story with you, this is a great story, and I have it in the book, is that my wife and I are sitting in the spa. We work out every morning early in the morning. We sit in our spa for about a half hour. So I'm sitting there, my wife is relaxing, and she's looking at my eyes, and my eyes do what they normally do. They're tracking. They're always looking. They're always curious. And she sees me, and she says, what are you thinking about? And I says, well, I just noticed that the neighbors got some debris in their gutter, and I wonder if they know that that's why that they got so much water running over their gutters. I also noticed our siding. They're starting to get some cracks in our siding. I've got to get some caulk on those. And the awning over our hot tub, I noticed we've got some mold on that, and I got to get up and get that off. And the tree, the neighbor's trees, he planted three trees that look identical, but one of them's a different color. I wonder why. And there's a truck driving through the neighborhood at 6:30 in the morning. That's kind of weird. I wonder why. And so I look at her and I says, well, what are you thinking about? And she goes, nothing. Absolutely nothing. And that's the difference. People with ADD don't realize that our brains are so unique. They're so different from other people's. My wife can relax and actually have nothing in her brain. Where my brain, why walk into a room? I see every corner of it. My brain is curious. People that have attention deficit issues, we have a curiosity muscle that nobody else has. And that's part of the brilliance, is we're always looking for, you know, why is it? Why is it that way? How could it be better? And so it's one of the things that there's so many, that's the brilliance behind it, is we have that curiosity muscle. The hard part is it's hard to slow down. And Dr. Hallowell, who's a great psychologist as well, he put it really great to children. He said, you've got a race car brain with bicycle brakes. Isn't that brilliant?
I think it is awesome. Brad, your book is really an eye-opener, and I think both for adults who maybe have felt like they have been a failure because they weren't smart or whatever label they accepted. And even for parents that may have children that are of this unique patterning, your book can be very, very insightful, and it may be a good read for someone that says, I wonder if this could be part of my challenge, because maybe nobody has ever brought that up to them. Maybe they've just been called stupid all of their life. And of course, as we know, those labels just don't serve a purpose at all. But that is part of being human, and we as humans often make judgments without understanding perhaps what's really going on behind the scenes. ADD is a gift, not a disorder. You have a website that people can go to, IamNotDisordered.com, IamNotDisordered.com, where people can find out more. Brad Worthley, it has been a delight having you again on the show. I just love this book. I think it is marvelous, and I wish you continued success with it.
Thanks, Donna. And if anybody wants to know if they have ADD, on that website, there's actually a free survey. They can go to the website and actually take this question, answer 20 questions. It'll tell you the likelihood of whether you have it or not. So please feel free to jump in there and use some of the free resources that are there. And Donna, thanks again so much for having me on.
It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. 888-627-6008 will be the number for you to call in to. Brad Worthley, thank you so much. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be right back.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone line to call into is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, just know I can tell you what I perceive, and you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is of significance and of importance to you. Again, 888-627-6008. Well, I wanted to let you know about the guests that are going to be coming up next week. We're going to be talking about fear and anxiety. Friedman Schaub is going to be my guest. This is an amazing publication. It really is very insightful, and all of us have had those moments where sometimes we get so fearful, so anxious, that we're literally paralyzed. And we're going to be able to work around that. We're going to be talking about The Secret of Rock and Roll next week with Christopher Knowles. Whoa, is that a fascinating read. And then also Garrett Sutton, a financial advisor. We're going to be learning about corporations and other such items. And Kensley Dennis is going to be my guest. The Dawn of the Akashic Age is going to be our subject as well. And we're just going to have just so many wonderful people. Untying the Knot also is going to be about a person that decided to change their identity. And we will be discussing how to meet and talk to just about anyone. Marvin Brown, we're going to be having him as a guest. So we have an absolutely awesome lineup next week. very diversified. Yes, I'm known for that. So I just encourage you to share it with your friends and be aware that the Donna Sebo Show, we have all kinds of interesting people, unique subjects, and you have a chance to hear all of these fabulous, fabulous people. Well, I wanted to share a sort of a weird story here. It took place in 2007 in Maiden, North Carolina. There was a man who bought a smoker at a police auction of abandoned items from a storage facility. So many police departments do this. They do it with cars. They have all of these items. So if they can sell them, then that gives them money for some of the things that they want to use it for. Now, when he opened up the smoker, apparently nobody had opened this thing. They just said, well, here it is, and we're just going to sell it. He thought it was a piece of wood that was inside. It was all wrapped up in paper. However, what he found was not a piece of wood. Mm-mm. It was a human leg. That's right. It was a human leg that had been amputated just above the knee. Well, of course, he let the police know, and they contacted the owners of the storage facility. It turned out that the owner's son had had his leg amputated after a plane crash and kept the leg for religious reasons. She and her son drove some 35 miles to retrieve it from the man who bought the smoker. Ah, yes. Weird, weird stuff. Now, another thing I wanted to share with you, and this is a little trivia about our very, very beloved George Washington. We all know from history that he had false teeth. Well, at the time that George Washington had false teeth, the methods and items that were used for this were horrible. He absolutely just went through a lot of agony. But contrary to the myth, he didn't have wooden teeth, but so often it is stated. He actually had four sets of dentures made from a mix. What was the mix? Hippopotamus bone, elephant ivory, and the teeth from cows and dead people. That gives you a little bit of the willies, doesn't it? Now, none of them worked well. And they said the discomfort of those dentures is one of the reasons why he looks so unhappy in those portraits that we see. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat, 888-627-6008. And I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. People make a difference in such fascinating, fabulous ways. And so many times, those that make a difference, very rarely, are even recognized for what they do. Well, there's a gentleman by the name of Albert Lexi. He's 71 years old, and he is a shoeshine man. That's right. He lives in Pennsylvania. Every day, he takes a bus, number 88, on a 90-minute ride that takes him to a shoeshine business in a children's hospital in Pittsburgh. He doesn't complain about that. Now, how many of us would want to sit on a bus for an hour and a half? Each way, that's 3 hours a day of your time. He has done this for years. Well, for 32 years, in fact, he has been very deeply involved with what he calls his kids. Albert has donated every tip he has ever received to the Children's Hospital Free Care Fund. And what this is for, it gives financial assistance to children who need medical treatment, but the families just don't have health insurance, don't have the means to pay for it. Now, Albert is developmentally disabled. He started shining shoes when he was 15 years old. He built his own shoeshine box in his high school woodworking class, painted it red, and put on the side Albert's shoeshine. So what he did to make money, after school on weekends, he would stand outside of restaurants and office buildings, and he'd shine shoes. Very industrious, I would say. Very resourceful. Now, by the time he finished with one customer on this particular day many years ago, this gentleman who had had his shoes shined was astonished. He said, "You just do such an awesome job. This is amazing. You have absolutely the perfect shine. I'll be back." Well, he built up a very good business. In fact, when he graduated from high school, he started his business full time. And eventually, he set up shop at the children's hospital. Why was that a good place? Well, there were doctors and technicians and staff, and he really loved shining shoes. He loved the people he was coming in contact with. He'd talk with them, and the kids meant a lot to him. He'd see children come in many times, and a lot of them never left. Some of them came out, and they were well. Well, one day, after he had gotten home from a long day at work, he was watching a fundraising telethon for the hospital, and he felt very sad when he was made aware of how many families could not afford medical care. And he thought to himself, boy, that's just not right. Now, he didn't make a lot of money. He was barely able to support himself. But he thought, there's got to be something I could do. What he heard next made a difference for many, many years, even today. They said, please, even if you only have a dollar, donate it to the children's hospital. This was stated by a mom who was being interviewed. The words that followed really had an impact on his mind. Your dollar could help save a life. Now, Albert at the time was only charging $5 for a shoe shine. And he reached over into his pocket and he pulled out the money that was there. He had his tips. He said, I wonder if $1 really could help. Albert had an idea. What if he gave all of his tip money to the kids? Those dollars could add up, and maybe he could make a difference. So he decided his tips, that's what he was going to do. Now, through that year, this is what Albert did. He told his customers, my tips are going to help sick children get better. And this is what happened. The people that listened to him say this, they doubled the money they gave him. He didn't ask for it. He said, this is what I'm going to do. My tips are going to make a difference. Within a year, Albert was able to donate $750. Since then, Albert has continued to shine shoes at Children's Hospital. He donates his tips to the fund. In 32 years, he has donated more than $200,000 just from his tips. Now, there's a doctor who is one of Albert's regular customers, and it means that everybody wants to support Albert in this. And the hospital staff just loves him. And they, on his 60th birthday, surprised him with a birthday cake that was shaped like a shoe. They bought him a new heavy wooden shoe shine box, but it's purple, not red. And he's won all kinds of awards. And people say, oh, we're so fortunate just to know you. And he said, you know what, I'm the lucky one because I get to help the kids. I just want them all to get better and to do well. He's making a difference $1 at a time. And his feeling is when you help kids, well, it's good to be a hero, which it is. Sometimes it's the little tiny things that accumulate, whether it's a dollar bill or support or words. It doesn't make any difference. Whatever you feel in your heart that you really want to contribute, that you want to do, you can make a difference. You don't have to be a Bill Gates. You don't have to be a Steve Jobs. You don't have to be a Warren Buffett. You're very important. You're very significant. And you know what? You get to choose what it is you want to do, just like Albert did. And that is the magic, I think, of Albert's story. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
We see it every day.
courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits, people losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. I came across an article of the Battle of the Batters, and I chuckled when I saw that title. And apparently there was a survey that was put out, and what they wanted to find out is what was the favorite cake of so many people. And they really wanted to narrow it down. So it was narrowed down between a German Black Forest cake and a German chocolate cake. Now, the German Black Forest cake was developed in Germany. This is something my German friends that love to bake. This is something they fix, and it's just absolutely amazing. It's got whipped cream in it, all kinds of good stuff. But the German chocolate cake, which actually came about because of an American baker, Samuel German. That's why it was named the German chocolate cake. It didn't have anything to do with Germany. And, boy, is that good. Why? Because it's got the caramelized frosting. It's got coconut in it. It's just amazing. 7,000 votes were submitted, and the coconut crazy goodness, yes, that's what they said, of the German chocolate was just overwhelmingly way above the Black Forest cake. So this is a recipe that they shared. And the woman who has this winning cake recipe, her name is Joyce Platfoot, and she's from Ohio. It takes about 30 minutes to prepare and, you know, about 30 minutes to bake the cake, and then you have to allow for some cooling. Makes about 12 servings, and I'd say leftovers, if you have any, will stay at room temperature. You want to keep it at room temperature, not in the fridge, for 2 to 3 days. Now, these are the ingredients for this cake. The German chocolate cake, you're going to need 4 ounces of German sweet chocolate. You want to chop that up. A half a cup of water, 1 cup of butter softened, 2 cups of sugar, 4 eggs separated, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 2.5 cups of cake flour, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 1 cup of buttermilk. That's right, buttermilk. The frosting, you're going to need 1.5 cups of sugar, 1.5 cups of evaporated milk, three quarter cup of butter, 5 egg yolks beaten, 2 cups of flaked coconut, 1.5 cups of chopped pecans. I like walnuts over pecans, so you can put walnuts in But anyway, you want to stick with the original pecans are in. 1.5 teaspoons of vanilla extract. And then there is icing at a teaspoon of shortening and 2 ounces of semi-sweet chocolate. You're going to need 3 greased and lined 9-inch baking pans. And this is what you do. In a small saucepan, you're going to melt your chocolate with water over low heat and let it cool. Then in a big bowl, you're going to cream your butter and sugar until it's light and fluffy. Mixers are great for this. You then want to, when that happens, you put in your 4 egg yolks, 1 at a time. You beat well after you put each one in. Then you put in your melted chocolate and your vanilla. You combine your dry ingredients, your flour, baking soda, and salt, and you add it to the creamed mixture in batches, and you want to alternate with the buttermilk, beating well after each addition. And then in a small bowl with clean beaters, you make sure your bowl is very clean, you want to beat your egg whites until they're stiff. And you fold 1/4 of the egg whites into the creamed mixture and then fold in the remaining whites. Pour your batter into your pan, bake at 350 for 24 to 28 minutes, or until your toothpick inserted near the center comes out clean, and you need to cool it about 10 minutes before you remove it from the pan, otherwise it'll break on you. And then you want to place your 3 layers of cake on wire racks so that they'll cool completely. Now, when you're ready to frost, this is what you're going to need. For your frosting in a small saucepan, you heat your sugar, your milk, your butter, and egg yolks over medium-low heat until it gets nice, thick, and golden brown. Now, you have to stir it constantly. You remove it from the heat, stir in your coconut pecans and vanilla. Now, you let it cool until it's thick enough to spread. And then you put 1/3 of the frosting over each of the cake layers. Of course, you stack your layers. And then for your icing, in the microwave, you melt your shortening and chocolate, stir until smooth, and drizzle it over the top of the cake, letting that rich chocolate go over the sides even. And if you really want to be decadent, double the chocolate and do that. And if you want, you can use milk chocolate or you can use your dark chocolate. Yum, yum, yum. And it is so good, but it's absolutely the favorite of favorites of so many people, and I wanted to share that with you. I thought, what fun to be able to do something like that and to be able to share it with those that you love. Porcupine quills, have you ever had the experience of getting one lodged in you? Well, not too many of us come across porcupines anymore, but they're very, very interested in porcupine quills. Why? Because of their uniqueness. Now, when porcupines, if they're upset, they'll throw those quills at you. That's part of their defense mechanism. And once it gets into the skin, doesn't make any difference whether you're a person or another animal, it takes twice the force of the power that took to put it in you to get it out. And why is that? Well, the quill, unseeable many times to the human eye, has a series of barbs along its tip. And when they were researching this, well, someone said, why is it that these are such effective items in defense? They started saying, how could we use this? They said, what if we replicated a quill's barbs to make drug delivery and internal patches hold fast even when wet? Now, this is what they came up with. They started doing some research with hypodermic needles, and they called it hypodermic needle architecture. The less push needed to pierce the flesh, the less chance of overshooting. And barbed quills take about 1/2 the pressure a needle does to insert, which may make the synthetic versions work better for procedures like spinal taps. To avoid tearing tissue on removal, there are 2 scientists, Jeffrey Karp at Harvard and MIT's Robert Langer. They are using degradable materials, so the barbs will lose their grip. And in some cases, they say a difficult-to-remove needle might be useful, too, including for immunizing cattle and performing battlefield medicine. Curiosity. Amazing things. This is Donna Sebo. Have an absolutely fabulous weekend wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Know that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent time. And won't you join me again on Monday? I look forward to having you here. It's a delight. Take care, and we'll be talking soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.